Well, you're in for a real treat this morning. I'm so excited to have my friend Rob Chestnut and his dear wife Audrey, and their children are in Children's Church right now. But you're going to be blessed. Rob is perhaps not a stranger to many of you here. He's been here in the past and had an opportunity to minister to our youth at the last retreat and left an incredible impact on their lives that continue. The fruit continues to this day. And so what an awesome thing. I've had an opportunity to get to know Rob back about 17 years ago when he and his family moved from Jersey to plant a church here on Long Island, and just always appreciated his sense of humor is unlike anything else, but perhaps the only thing more than that is his passion and his love for Jesus, and as well as his passion for his family. And so it is a privilege to have him with us. He's one of our missionaries that we're going to be supporting. He'll share a little bit of his story with you this morning. Without any further ado, let's give a warm welcome to Rob Chestnut this morning.
Everybody, good morning. It is wonderful to be with you all. Yes, that picture was the whole fam. That was everybody all together. So I got to do introductions. So my wife, Audrey, who's actually right there, and she can wave. The deal in our marriage is I never make her get up on stage with me. I never make her talk or anything along that line. And we have been happy ever since. So she stays seated and everything is good. And then we have Stella and Adria. And then I'm wearing the exact same shirt that I have on right now. So that's good planning. I don't know. We'll see how the day goes. But it's great to be with all of you. It feels familiar and almost home-like to be here at Integrity. As Pastor Tony said, I had the opportunity to come up back in February and hang out with all of your youth, or youths, I believe as they are told, or called. There we go. It's happening. But I got to be honest, you know, I think as a 38-year-old, you wander into a strange environment and you're confident and you're cool, and then you walk into a room full of teenagers and you're like, I got nothing. I've made a huge mistake. Okay, let's just, I can do this. But really, I came away from the weekend and I was just like blessed beyond belief by your students. I mean, really, I have never been able just to wander into a place and just gel in such a way. And I felt like I'd been there for years, and it was just a massive blessing. So you guys have something special here. And I had such a great time with them. I felt like I needed to come and tell you the exact same thing that I told them. So guys, if this is familiar, just, you know, nod a lot. Yes. Can we get that? That's good. Great. Cool. Thank you. But, so as Pastor Tony said, we are missionaries. We have been missionaries for about 5.5 years in the Czech Republic with an organization called Josiah Venture. And we always need to do a little bit of biblical trivia. What is significant about Josiah in the Old Testament? He was a king. Great, you guys are already doing better than first service. Awesome. And what was the significant? And there was something special about him being a king. Do you know what? He was young. Yes, he was young. That's right. When he was a teenager, he found the book of the law. And by finding the book of the law, he was able to point the nation back to God in a way that no other king had done almost since David. And actually, I learned something even recently, that when you look at the reason why Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were able to survive and thrive in Babylon, it's because they were kids under the reign of King Josiah. And the reason we're called Josiah Venture is because we believe that in Central and Eastern Europe, where there are 32.5 million young people and less than 1% of them know Jesus Christ, if we can find those young Josiahs, they can change the hearts and minds of their nations and point them back to God in a way that's never been done before. And so that's our focus. That's our heart and our desire. And that's what we were a part of over there. And really, for us, we've gone through a lot of change, because we were there for about 5.5 years with an English camp ministry. And the camp ministry is primarily in the summer based. You know, you have a year of prep and planning, and then you partner up U.S. churches with Czech churches and other, you know, Central and Eastern European countries, because those students, they want to speak English. But if I'm honest, they really just want to hang out with Americans, and especially New Yorkers, right? Because let's be honest, there's nothing more hilarious than teaching a kid from Prague how to say, forget about it. No, forget about it. Yes, okay, good, it works. But, because, you know, we have teams coming from, like, Oregon and Ohio. No one cares about those places. Like, they want to meet New Yorkers. Let's be honest here. Let's be honest. So we were a part of that culture. We were a part of that for a long time. Some people in this room have been able to come and be a part of those trips, and that was really cool. And but then we felt that there was a change in season taking place, because when you have a wife and two young kids and you're gone for the bulk of the summer, we recognized something needed to change. We didn't feel like we needed to leave the field, but we had an opportunity to go back to our home church in Sarasota, Florida, and take up a position there on staff. And we thought that was going to be just this natural, very easy transition. You're in culture A, and we're just going to slide into culture B, and that everything was going to be great, and we would never have any issues. And that was not the case. Sound effect helped too. That worked really well. And so that was not what we were expecting. And honestly, that's a little bit of what I'm sharing this morning, is just some of our story in the midst of that process. But now we actually are going back to Czech Republic, but for very different reasons and for different methods. We'll be with the same organization in a different role, because we still are passionate about what God is doing, but he needed to take us out of that culture and move us into a different one for a little while, because here's the deal. When you live in one place for a specific amount of time and then you move to someplace foreign like Czech Republic, or maybe your grandparents say Czechoslovakia, and that's fine, things are weird, really weird. Culture is different. Mentalities are different. People are different. Methods of transportation are different. Habits and things are different. Just to give you kind of a quick analysis, if I could do a comparative study real quick, let me ask you, Americans, how many medals are we going to win in the Olympics this summer or winter or whenever the next Olympics are? How many medals are we going to win? All of them. Correct answer. That is correct. We waste no time and we say all of them. And if you were to ask a Czech, how many medals are you going to win in the next Olympics? They would go, two, yeah, three maybe. They'll probably all be bronze. But most likely we'll all be disqualified. And they're being honest. This is their mentality. We say that Americans are like peaches and Czechs are like coconuts. You know, we're soft and squishy. How are you? Jonathan, how are you? Good, yeah, and I'm good too. Great, we just became best friends. That was amazing, like awesome. I can be best man at your wedding whenever the time comes. And but if I were to really like ask, no, how are you doing? And if I were to dig down a little bit deeper, we all just like, okay, hey, tell you what, buddy, you just stay over there. No, Czechs are like that from the outset, and we say they're coconuts because you got to drill down through that outer shell. But once you get in, you ever opened up a coconut? What's on the inside of it? It's open, it's nothing, all the good stuff. Once you can get through that shell, you've got access to them. And so this is what we were up against. And so this was the culture we were becoming a part of. And suddenly, well, not suddenly, actually it took a while, but those things that were weird became normal and common and every day. And you just got used to certain levels of interaction and stuff just happened as it was. And then we had this opportunity to move back to the States. And so now you return to what should be your normal culture. And in doing so, suddenly the things that are supposed to be normal are weird. Case in point, how many of you wear your shoes in your own home on a regular basis? You just walk in the house and you don't take your shoes off. Yes, you're disgusting. I'm just going to be honest and tell you like it is. You know, this is just how it is. Like in Europe, you walk into a house, you take your shoes off automatically. And it was just this, you know, this is this habit you learn. And so you go and visit people and you walk in the door and you start to take your shoes off. And they're like, oh, you don't need to do that. I'm like, oh, yes, I do. And you should follow my lead. Do you know what's outside? So, but here was the reality. Coming back into this normal culture, this original culture that now was weird, I recognized something, that my identity had changed. I wasn't who I was when I first left, but I wasn't who I was over here. Because over here, I had wrapped my identity around being a missionary, into living in Prague and being a part of English camps and having this ministry and doing all these different things. And do you know what happens when you move to America? That stuff stays over there. It doesn't come with you. And boy, it changes like that. And I hit a wall and I had no idea what was going on. I was like the frog in the boiling pot. And if you know that illustration, you turn the heat up, they're not going to jump out quickly. And so everything began to just tailspin, for lack of a better term. And I found myself in this position of just like, I'm not here. I'm trying to be over there. And in trying to be over there, boy, I was striving and reaching for anything that I could find to help build that identity back up again, because I had lost it. I did not have my identity built in Jesus, but I had my identity built in who I was and what I was doing. And in that process, then when you step out of all of it, now you're scrambling. And so I was grasping at anything that I could find. And at the tail end, somewhere in the middle of 2017, is suddenly the reality was beginning to set in that things were not good, that this was not a fit, that I was, you know, like everything is coming apart. I had a really dear friend of mine say, "Hey, Rob, do you know what the first words of Jesus are in the book of John?" And maybe some of you right now, you're trying to think, okay, in the beginning was the Word. No, that's John writing. That's not Jesus saying anything. In fact, it's almost like verse 40, like 30 or 40 until Jesus actually speaks. But do you know what he says? "What are you seeking? What are you seeking?" My friend Dan challenged me. He just said, you know, Jesus, he was talking to the disciples because the disciples are thinking about like room and board and a place to stay. But I think Jesus asks us that question right now. And I think he's asking you that same question, man. What are you seeking? Because boy, you're not here and you're not there. You're missing something. What I was missing was a kingdom culture. I was trying to live in two different places and it doesn't work. And actually what I recognize now is I needed a kingdom culture. I needed a kingdom mindset. And you're only going to be able to find that in Jesus. And the only way you're going to be able to experience that is to abide. And that's what we're going to talk about this morning. So if you could go to John chapter 15 in your Bibles or devices or whatever else, and I know we'll have the verses up on the screen. But let me ask you, what are you seeking? Are you tired? Are you anxious? Are you worn out? Are you bothered? Are you looking for something? Do you love God, but it just doesn't seem to click? I want to talk to you about what I think the answer for that might be. So first off, a little bit of context as you're flipping and turning pages and pulling things up. This is the farewell discourse, is what it's known as. This is right after the Last Supper. The disciples and Jesus are leaving. It's before the crucifixion. They're headed actually towards the Garden of Gethsemane. And so in that time, I feel as though Jesus is, he's got a limited window in which to kind of send these last key messages, these things that you need to know, this stuff to impart to his disciples. And one of them is this section. And we're going to see two main ideas here, kind of two different areas, if you will. The first is dealing with that of a vine and the illustration of the vine. And the second is abiding in God's love and what that actually looks like for us. So we're going to get a little gardeny, if you will. But then trust me, it has a meaning and a reason behind it all. So John chapter 15, verses 1 through 3. "I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away, and every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, that it may bear more fruit. Already you are clean because of the word that I have spoken to you." So first and foremost, we need to reset our thinking in regards to a vine. Because maybe in your house or in your backyard or front yard, or maybe even on the side of your house, you have vines. And when we think of vines, we think of these like kind of thin, you know, scraggly things that are kind of going all over the place. And really, you need to think more along the lines of like almost a bush or a tree, in fact. These things would be huge. I mean, they're about like kind of this big around. They come up out of the ground almost as tall as me probably, and then out across with these two main, you know, ways. And this is how a vine grows. Maybe you've been to a winery on the North Fork because, you know, this is godless New York and you have those things around here, as I've been told. So, I mean, not that I've ever seen them or anything like that. But so these things, you know, this is not a standard little thing that we're talking about. The little thing you're thinking about is probably the branches that would come off. And from the branches, this is where you get the fruit that would come about. And the reality is that those branches, they don't really do a whole lot except just kind of, you know, photosynthesis. You remember your like lessons in school, okay? But really it's the vine is the central powerhouse. Everything comes out of the vine. All the nutrients and whatnot go from the vine into the branches and then into the fruit subsequently. And so that's the thing that keeps it all together. This is why Jesus is using that illustration to help the disciples understand his role in the midst of their life. But then he talks about pruning, okay? And the importance of pruning. He needs to go and prune. And so I don't know if you, again, in terms of your lawns and things of that nature, you need to prune stuff and take care of things. Just think about the idea of pruning for a minute, but we'll come back to it, not right now. But keep this in mind, though. What do I need to prune? Ask yourself that question. What do I need to prune? What would I need to prune? But let's keep going in verse 4. Abide in me and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. So Jesus gives us a couple illustrations here that are kind of these like cycles, if you will. And this is the first one that he references. And I just want you to kind of think like, abide in me and I in you. Abide in me and I in you. And this is a process that will go around and around. And yet it's interesting to get this like first picture of this because you have to think about it. Israel at this time is still under the law. There's still the old covenant. They're going to the temple. They're doing sacrifices. They got rituals and all those different pieces. And yet what Jesus is showing his disciples right here is a glimpse of what is to come. This is a future. This is a future grace. This is kingdom mentality. Abide in me and I in you. But why on earth are we talking about this kind of, okay, me and you and me and whatever else? What's the significance of the term abide? And here's the part that maybe you don't recognize is that abide means to continue, to stay. Your translation might even say to remain. And again, these are not active words, all right? These are actually almost kind of passive in some regards, but they're a different from what we usually encounter. And so he's talking about a vine, he's talking about fruit, because I need to ask you this question: how does fruit grow? Now, see, you're probably all thinking like, okay, well, there's the roots and there's the water and then there's the sunshine. But I'm talking in terms of speed. How does fruit grow? Slowly. Yes, slowly. Fruit, we want our fruit to grow slowly. How would we feel if our fruit grew in like 10 minutes? I mean, it might be nice, but are you going to trust that fruit, you know? I mean, you think of like, I asked the first service as well, how many people like KFC? And, you know, you had a couple hands started to go up and then they quickly came down, but it seemed like a lot of them. But, you know, do we like our chickens when they're like pumped full of hormones so they grow real fat real quick? No? No, we want that organic free-range chicken. You know, we need that. I need to know that this chicken has been loved and fed out of my hand, you know, that sort of thing. We want things to take, we don't want things to go quickly. Maybe you've heard the phrase, you can't microwave character, all right? It's gonna take some time. And this is why Jesus is talking about fruit, talking about a vine, because he needs the disciples to understand that this is gonna be a process to abide in me and I in you. This is not something that's gonna happen overnight. So, let's keep going. Verses 5-8. I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he is thrown away like a branch and withers. And the branches are gathered, thrown into the fire and burned. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. By this my Father is glorified that you bear much fruit and so prove to be my disciples. So he continues with the illustration of the branches so that they understand this part, because we have, again, the branches coming off of the vine. But if we remove the branches, we're in trouble, all right? You remove the branches, and what can you do apart from God? Nothing. Nothing. He's very honest and to the point. So it's helpful if we're very honest and to the point to be, sorry, cameraman, helpful and to the point with visual illustrations. Ooh. This guy's already looking a little not so great. So this is a branch. This is a branch that I liberated from a tree just out back. And I'm just kind of wondering, so you know, so how's this branch looking to everybody? Looking okay. Yeah, you know, it's all right. It's not right. And you know, it's not a centerpiece for your table, but you know, it'll do what it needs to do for the time being. And you know, what's really cool, I don't know if you guys are aware of this or not, but if we focus like all of our like positive energy and good feeling at this branch right now, it can grow a little more. Are you guys ready? You gonna help me out with this one? I can see it on your faces. We're very excited about this right here. Okay, ready? Everybody at the branch, 3, 2, 1, go. yeah, not, come on. Come on, you're not trying hard enough, okay? Like, but here's the reality. This branch is dead. It's not growing anymore. In fact, it already looks a little bit weaker from first service. And I bet by the end of this one, and maybe later this afternoon, it's gonna be, it's done. It's dying. And there's nothing we can do in order to bring life into it. And this is the example again that's given, is there's nothing you and I can do in all of our strength and goodwill and whatever else to try and develop something more, because once we're separated from the vine, folks, apart from me, you can do nothing. Do nothing. So if we're gonna be in the vine, if we're gonna be a part of it, if we're gonna abide in Jesus, we need to understand what it is that Jesus is bringing to us. And that's why he says in verse 7, if you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. Well, that's fun. That sounds good. Okay, so if I'm in Jesus, I can get whatever I want. We have a nice little prosperity gospel or some, you know, blank check theology here. It's great. But that's not what he's saying. Because the words he's referencing, in fact, the translation of that one, the word is logos, which is the same as in the beginning of John 1. In the beginning was the word, and the word is the message, and the message is the gospel. And if you had to kind of wrap Jesus into like a, say, hey, what's a key verse that could just be used to define what he did on earth? I would use Matthew 4:23, and it says this, and he went throughout all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom and healing every disease and every affliction among the people. And just the next chapter over, he begins the Sermon on the Mount. And so we talked about this frustration of culture here and culture there, but really needing a kingdom culture in the middle. And I think sometimes we forget, we think Jesus came just to die for my sins, which he did, but Jesus also came to give us life and show you how to live that life. And if you haven't gone through and read the Sermon on the Mount recently, I would highly encourage you to, because this is the word, this is the message he's talking about. In order to abide in me and I in you, these are the words, this is the message, this is his design and desire for each and every one of us to understand and live out this life, this kingdom life. And it's also really cool too, because when he says, ask whatever you want and it will be given to you. And really what we're saying here is, when you begin to abide in Jesus, when you begin to fold your life into his, and you begin to act and look and sound and do the things that he did, his thoughts, his ways, his desires are gonna be your thoughts, ways, and desires. You're gonna wanna do what Jesus did. So the things you ask for are not something totally off the wall. Like that branch, when it's on the vine, it just can't randomly decide to grow lemons or like make a loaf of bread. You know, or something along this, like it's only gonna do what the vine is gonna allow it to do. And so the more you fold yourself into Jesus, the more then you are gonna be able to fall more into Jesus, and you're gonna look and be and act just like he is. This is why when you ask for those things, it's gonna be the things that he wants as well. And that's pretty cool, to be honest with you. But we'll keep going, verses 9 through 11. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be full. So here we have our second pairing. The first is abide in me and I in you. And this one is saying that if you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love. And by staying in his love, you're gonna have that desire to keep his commandments. So again, we see this process continuing through. Keep my commandments, abide in my love. This is what's happening. And again, this is that picture, that glimpse of that kingdom culture. Because it's not just a one and done system like, okay, all right, I'm just gonna keep all the commandments. Great, I'm in God's love. I'm finished, I'm done. I don't need to do anything else. How does that work? Not so well. Why is Jesus using the illustration of a vine again? Because it's a process. Because it's gonna take time. And because it's gonna keep going, okay? You don't have vines that just grow fruit once and done. You know, they're finished. They will continue doing it so long as they are within the vine. So we're talking about keeping his commandments, abiding in his love. What does that look like in terms of his commandments? This is next section of verses 12 through 15. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. If you are my friends, you do what I command you. And no longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends, for all that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. So we have a kind of another twofold section here, which is really interesting. And the greatest command, this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Isn't it great to love people like Jesus loves them? And we do so good at it too, right? I mean, constantly. I just wake up in the morning and I'm just like, Lord, I am ready to love people like you love people. I take one step onto a Lego and suddenly it's all out the window. Like it's gone. Or, you know, we're so patient and caring when we're driving, right? Especially on Long Island. I'll just stop there. I won't keep going. But so that sentence is very easy to kind of, you know, it's like, yeah, we want to love people. We're all very loving and accepting. We're all just a wonderful, accepting bunch of lovey-dovey people. And yet verse 13 says, greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. Okay there, hang on. Let's pump the brakes on that statement real quick, because I have to lay down my life for my friends. Like I have 13,000 friends on Facebook. I can only really do this once. I mean, I've got to pick the right guy. And Kyle, it is not you. So I'm just saying, sorry, dude. But, you know, so like, what do I do? How do I got to lay down my life for some? What does that even look like? But the reality is it's not in a sense of dying, maybe as you might read there. But in fact, the translation, the original meaning is more of giving up or laying aside a right to a possession. And that possession, church, is you. I think I'd rather do the die thing, okay? I do not want to pull myself out of the picture, all right? And this is what Jesus is saying, essentially, is that if you're gonna love people the way I love people, you're gonna take all of your qualms, all of your desires, all of your rights, all of your whatevers, and you're gonna put them aside for the sake of the other person who's right there in front of you. Oof. That one's rough. That's a hard one to pull off. But God, you don't understand. Like when people talk to me a specific way, I can't just like listen to them. I have to like let them know how wrong they are. Like, you know, it's my spiritual gift. Like I'm here to help these people. No, but it's essentially saying, no, you need to take yourself out of the picture entirely. You need to set aside your right in order to love the person that's there in front of them. And the only way, church, we're gonna be able to do that is to keep his commandments, is to abide in his love. Jesus knows full well, I am not able to love somebody without his help. That's why he's here. That's why he's a part of my life. And the reality is too, though, if we can begin to step into that, if we can begin to live that way, we move from servants to friends. And he's very specific in saying this too, because servants do what they're told, all right? How good would all of you, if I close this message today of like, all of you need to go out there and love people. Got it? You know, how that doesn't really go over very well. I mean, you can't tell someone, you know, I command you to love me. You know, I say that to my children, but it only goes, I command you to love me, but it only goes so far. No, that's gotta be a choice. That's gotta be a willingness to do so. And you're only gonna be able to pull that off if you no longer are a servant who's told what to do, but if you're living in the way that Jesus wants, well, now you're friends. You're on the same page. You understand, you know where I'm coming from. This is what he's saying. And then a final reminder for the disciples, he tells them this, verses 16 and 17. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should abide, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you. And these things I command you, so that you will love one another. He's telling the disciples, remember, I picked you. There were a lot of other options to choose from, but I picked you in particular. And you are gonna have fruit that will abide, that will continue, that will remain. And I don't know if you're aware of this, church, but you are a direct product of that fruit. What started there thousands of years ago, that then spread to Greece, that then moved itself over to Rome, and then moved up into Europe, and then from there came across the Atlantic Ocean and got started here. And now here we are, 2019, how many years, thousands of years later, fruit that abides. You are a direct product of that. Do you know that? Jesus speaking right here. He is referencing you in this passage. If you believe and follow Jesus Christ, you are a part of that. And so, and I need you to understand something too. It's going to continue. You have a part in it. Now, I know you guys think like, oh, but yeah, you're the missionary though. Like you get to go do the missionary things in the Czech Republic. Big deal, guys. Okay. You have a mission field too that you've been called to, and it's called Long Island. And have you been there? You know, people always ask me like, so what's it like in Czech? And they think it's like, you know, war-torn Bosnia or something along this line. Bosnia is nice too, by the way. But then, you know, I feel like, have you been to Long Island? I mean, have you seen this place? Have you driven on the road to get on the highway from here? I mean, it's bombed out. Like, let's be honest. Like, this place is in dire need of reconstruction too, okay? So you have a mission field, church. And here's the reality. If you follow Jesus, you know, you're a missionary or a mission field. There's no two ways about it. You have a place and a calling that I'm not going to go to. I'm not interacting with your coworkers. I'm not interacting with your family. I don't know your friends. That's your mission field. That's where you're supposed to be. So great. I just happen to be in Europe. You guys happen to be here. We're all on the same team. We've all on the same mission. And if you like question this, ba-boom, you're deputized. There you go. All right, you're good. You're all missionaries now. Congratulations. Boom. You seem very reassured in that fact as well too. So we'll take it for what it's worth. If you didn't like this, the regular guy will be back next week. It's okay. So anyway... But maybe now you've come to this point and you're saying, okay, Rob, this is great. We've been talking about fruit, whatever, we're following commandments, but what does this mean? What does this really mean? What does this look like in 2019 to abide? Because, you know, John really likes this word. He uses it 34 times in the Gospels and then another 19 times in his letters. He constantly brings up this term, abide, abide, abide. Verse 4 again, abide in me and I in you, as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. So let's go back to the vine real quick. And I asked this question, but how does fruit grow? Slowly. And how do we do with slow in Long Island? Oh, that's what he was going for. Oh, yeah. See, this is the reality, though, church, is that this is a process. This is going to take time. This is something that is going to take effort, actually, because we were talking about this idea of pruning. Remember, we said back, why do we prune? What are we pruning things? To prune, essentially, in 2019 language, is to stop, to slow down, to remove, to step back from the pace at which you are running and going. So let's give you a little personal story time. So when we moved back to the States, remember we were living and existing in this culture. And so we come back to this culture over here. And when I came back about 6 months in, we had an opportunity to go to a retreat center out in Colorado for a debrief and renewal time. And they do this for missionaries who are coming off the field because there's culture shock and reentry and all these different things you have to go through. And inevitably too, I have to just be honest and say that, isn't it funny that these retreat things are always planned by introverts, right? Like their idea of like, you know, good is go off into the woods and find like a tree and just sit underneath it and write down your feelings. And I don't do that, okay? I don't write my feelings, you know, I need activity and people, this is great, like this is, I can process my feelings with all of you. Let's do it right now. But the idea of sitting down and journaling, you know, guys, let's be honest. We only journal when we're going through some really difficult stuff, okay? Things are fine, nothing. Things are difficult, man, I really just thought through what I was blah, 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 blah. And you should go back and read those journals too, guys. And I know you've done it because they are hilarious. But so I did a little bit of journaling because we had the time and whatever else. And I went back and found this entry. And this is real. I didn't make this up for the message. I wrote this down myself. So my desire and control is not for me to be someone else, but for me to abide in him alone. Okay, that sounds good. Not to strive for someone else's spiritual barometer, but for me to understand that this is only about me and my own fight and my own struggle to achieve my desire to abide. Oh, what's up with that guy? Now, do you notice those words? And that emphasis was mine. I mean, I capitalized that stuff. I didn't just throw it in here, okay? But, you know, and don't get me wrong, too. A desire to abide in Jesus is great. I hope you come away with that today. But these words, I'm going to fight, I'm going to strive, I'm going to struggle, I'm going to achieve. What I'm doing is saying, if I just put some effort into this, it's going to... It's not going to work. It's not going to work. Fight as you like. Strive as you like. That's not how we abide in Jesus. So I called a friend of mine towards the end of November of 2017, which was definitely the end. And I told him, I just said, dude, I'm done. I'm toast. I'm worn out. I'm anxious. I'm bothered. I don't like me. I don't like anybody. I don't like my job. I don't like anything. I was trapped. And he said, okay, all right. Can you give me like an illustration or something to help explain this? And so I really like Star Wars and And I told him, I said, I don't know how else to say this, but like I'm Luke Skywalker at the end of episode 8, okay? I am alone on an island by myself and I can astral project my presence different places. Sorry if I just ruined the movie for you. It's been like 2 years. You should be up to it by this point. So, but I said, that's essentially me, you know, and I can fake it. I can fake it. I can be this person for a little while, but it's not really me. He said, okay, all right. So I got a question for you. And don't give me the Sunday school answer, but is Jesus on that island? And I said, no, he's not. He goes, okay, all right. So do you know where you are? No, I don't. He goes, oh, buddy, you're in hell. Very encouraging. And the good news is, though, if you're in hell, it probably means you've hit rock bottom. So you can only go up from there. But then he said something else. He said, look, you're a pastor's kid. You grew up in this. You know all the lingo. You went to Christian high school. You went to Christian college. Then you became a missionary. Now you're a pastor on staff at a church. You know all the right stuff to say and exactly how to say it and all the clear whatevers and all that stuff. Stop. Stop. You need to love Jesus. Because that's the one thing you're definitely not doing right now. And then he hit it home even harder and he said, and here's the deal too. I don't know what that looks like for you. I can't give you like some reading plan or some book or whatever. He goes like, you need to figure it out for yourself because you haven't done that. You don't love him. And boy, that was a 2x4 right in the middle of my soul and it was exactly what I needed in the midst of that time. And so instead of striving and trying and doing all these things, I stopped and I stepped back and I began to let the vine dresser prune things away. Some of it was good, don't get me wrong, but you know why we prune stuff? Now we finally get the answer. Do you know why we prune things? Because a vine, as it grows out, will have tons of fruit that it can produce. But if you don't prune that fruit, you know what happens? It's not good fruit. It'll make a lot of it. Don't get me wrong. It'll make a lot of fruit, but it's not good fruit. Nobody wants that fruit. You don't make choice wine with those type of grapes. You need to cut that back. You need to cut some stuff out so that all the nutrients and all the energy and all that goodness will only flow into a specific amount of clusters. But boy, those clusters, when you see them, man, that's the good stuff. That's the great stuff. That's fruit that abides. That's fruit you can do something with. And this is why Jesus is giving this illustration that's still valuable for us today, because we are in that place. You are in that place. So let me ask you something. I think I already did. Are you anxious? Are you stressed out? Are you bothered? Are you angry easily? Are you going through all of these things? Go back into the Sermon on the Mount and read the manual for kingdom culture life. Because Jesus directly in there, he says how to handle anger, lust, anxiety, retaliation, loving your enemies, how to pray, how to trust him, how to fast, how to do all of these things, these kingdom things that if you cut that stuff out of your life, you begin to abide in Jesus and he will abide in you. This is the reality that I was facing. This is what I was coming into contact with. And at the very end of the Sermon on the Mount, you know what Jesus says? Everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. But that very first sentence, whoever hears these words and does them. There's a catch. You can't just keep listening and coming on Sunday mornings and listening and listening and listening and listening and listening. There is an action required in the midst of this too. So, January 1st, 2018, we had a dog. Well, I mean, we still have a dog. He's not dead. He's no longer our dog. He's retired in Texas with family because he's not coming with us to check. But I had the dog. And if you have the dog, you have to walk the dog. And like every good American, I walk the dog with my phone in my left hand and the dog's leash on the right. And I just, you know, crooked-necked my way around the neighborhood, scrolling through nothing, wasting my time night after night after night. But January 1st, 2018, I said, you know what? I think I'm going to leave the phone in the house. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to leave the phone in the house. And I'm gonna walk, and as I walk, I'm gonna pray. And I'll start. And so I started to pray. And then when I came home, I would spend some time in the Word. And I just started doing this night after night after night after night. And some nights, you know, I'm talking to God and we're having a great conversation. And some nights I was super angry. And some nights I just listened. And some nights I read the Word and it was like, whoa. And other nights, you know, okay. And, you know, and I just kind of went through this process. But you know what happened after the first week? Nothing. But you know what happened after the third week? Nothing. And the fifth and sixth. And then the second month, and then, you know, maybe the third month, I didn't feel anything. But somewhere around the fifth month, I don't really remember when, but I did a message in church and one of the congregants came up and said, hey, there's something different about your message today. I don't know what it is, but I just felt like I needed to tell you that. And they left. And it was like, wait a second. You don't know anything that's going on behind the scenes and you saw something different? And then suddenly I began to recognize that I was loving my wife differently. We weren't really getting in fights. Not that we ever get in fights, honey. I mean, just, I mean, in the rarities in which it would happen, which is, I'm wrong. Sorry. But there was a change. We saw it. We were experiencing it, the way in which we were treating each other, because she was going through her own process as well too. I came back and went like this. She came back and found this amazing group of community and just took off. But yet in that same process, we both were coming to this central pillar of what it means to abide in Jesus, to find that kingdom culture, to not be defined by this part or any other part, but have your life defined by Jesus Christ. And so things were different. We were interacting, we were loving our neighbors differently. We every aspect of our life was changing in a way that we didn't recognize and see, that almost we needed outside people to come and tell us in some ways. But here's the reality of it, church. It's a process. If you abide in me, I will abide in you. And suddenly my priorities were not what they used to be. And my choices and desires were not what they used to be. And the reason we are going back to the Czech Republic is because, well, that's where he wants us. But do you know why he brought us back to America for like 2.5 years? I mean, what kind of crazy person moves from Europe to the States, barely even gets enough time to get her driver's license, and then leaves again, okay? Like, I needed that. I desperately needed it, and I didn't even know it. I needed to be pruned. I needed to be put in a place where I would learn what it was to abide in him so that he could abide in me. Are you stressed out? Are you bothered? Are you angry? Are you frustrated? Do you love and follow Jesus and yet you feel like you look like everybody else around you? I get it. I've been there. I know what that is. And I know that there is a way out of it. And it is not a 6-week Bible study. And it is not a microwavable character. It is gonna take some time. But it is worth it. So let me ask you again, church, what do you need to prune? What do you need to cut back in order to abide in Jesus? Let's pray. Lord, we don't want to be branches left to just be thrown away and tossed. We don't want to be trying to do things of our own accord and ability. We want to rest in you. We want to find our peace in you. We want to abide in you. And God, you give us the ability to do so. So Lord, I pray for this church. I pray for the people in this room right now who might resonate with some of this. Jesus, give them the opening, that door, that first step even just to take to say, hey, today I'm going to do something a little different. I'm going to learn what it is to abide in Jesus. Father, we are so grateful for what you're doing in this church and around the world. We commit them to you, and we are so blessed to see and to know that if we abide in you, you will abide in us. In Jesus' name, amen.